Welcome to Torah Nacha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Hochheimer, and today we are studying Yechezkel Perek Yud, Chapter 10. We are now in the third of a four Prakim series where Yechezkel was transported to Yerushalayim in a prophetic vision. The first two Prakim were intensely unsettling. In the first Perek, we experienced bizarre and tragic idol worship. In the second Perek, Perek Tes of the series, we heard about six destroyers who were searching the city of Yerushalayim for any human beings to kill, sparing no one. There was a seventh man dressed in linen, a scribe who was supposed to mark the foreheads of the tzaddikim to spare them. Either he could find no one to mark, or the midas hadin, the attribute of justice, negotiated that even tzaddikim should be killed. In this parak, we find a shift from the last parak. Yechezkel sees a vision of Hashem's merkava, which is similar yet different to what was described in parak Aleph when he was on the river Kfar. Hashem then gives a new command to the man clothed in linen. He is to take fiery coals and throw them on the city, which is strange if everybody has already been killed. We then hear of how the Keruvim get involved in this command. Finally, the Merkava, the Ofanim, and the Keruvim, the celestial beings described in Perek Aleph, leave the Mikdash, as does Hashem. Within this Perek, there are a few ideas I'd like to explore. First is how and why did the description of the Merkava change from the first Perek? In the first parak, Yechezkel sees, and I'm not going to translate it because it's not translatable, Ofanim and Kruvim, and only at the end do we hear about the Rakia and the Kiseh, the throne of Hashem. Here, Yechezkel first describes the Kiseh and the Rakia, and only later mentions the Ofanim and the Kruvim. As we discussed, the Merkava was a description of how Hashem uses spiritual forces to affect change in the world. Each spiritual entity influences the entity beneath it until the physical universe is impacted. We can't really understand what it means, and these psukim write ideas using language and concepts which are familiar to us but don't really fit the ideas they're describing. In Perek Aleph, when we heard about the Merkava, Yechezkel first encountered the farthest removed force from Hashem and then kept on seeing more and more until he saw the force closest to Hashem. He first saw the Kruvim before seeing the Kiseh HaKavod. In Perek Yud, chapter 10, our Perek, he sees the Kiseh HaKavod first. The Abarbanel explains that in this Perek, Hashem wants to reinforce that though there is a Merkava, a series of forces, truly the ultimate force behind everything is Hashem. It's Hashem who kills the inhabitants of Yerushalayim. It won't come from political, natural, or even spiritual forces. Although Hashem may have sent six machshesim, six destroyers, to decimate the city in the last Perek, they were the direct agents of Hashem. The second idea I'd like to discuss before getting into the psukim is who is this Levush Badim, the man clothed in linen? Why is he even being given a new command after he was told to mark the foreheads of the people to save them? Chazal, quoted by Rashi, tell us that this man is the Malach Gavriel. Why in the previous parak was he looking for tzaddikim and here he is burning down the city in fire? If we read the psukim closely in this parak, we will see there is no contradiction. According to the Malbim, in the previous parak, Hashem was dealing with the Jewish people according to the Midas Hadin, the strict attribute of justice. As Chazal said at the end of Parak Tes, chapter 9, the Midas Hadin came to Hashem and demanded that everyone, even tzaddikim, be killed. The Midas Hadin, the attribute of justice, is the natural consequences that flow from poor spiritual decisions. Bnei Yisrael sinned, and they deserve destruction. The flow of spiritual consequences is carried out through the parts of the Merkava. Here, Hashem wanted to reach above the Midas Hadin to the divine aspect of mercy, as symbolized by his Kiseh HaKavod that Yechezkel first encounters in this parak. We will see that in this parak, though there will be destruction, this destruction is tempered by elements that soften the blow. The Malach Gavriel is told to burn the city, not the people. As Yechezkel told us, this parak takes place in year 6, and the decree is postponed for another 6 years rather than to be carried out like the immediacy we saw in the last parak. Though this city will be burned, the people will survive. Rav Soloveitchik builds on this idea. He quotes a Medrash on Tehillim. The Pasuk in Tehillim says, "A song of Asaf, Hashem, the nations have entered into your estate. They defiled the sanctuary of your holiness." The Medrash asks, "A song of Asaf? It should have been titled a Kinala Asaf, a dirge of Asaf." The Medrash answers that Asaf sang with happiness and joy that Hashem vented his anger on the wooden stones of the Beis HaMikdash and not on the Jewish people. During the 3 weeks leading up to Tisha B'Av, the grief intensifies with increasing acts of mourning. Then on Tisha B'Av, it reaches its peak. We can't say hello, and we must sit on the floor. Then at Chatzos, at midday, it starts to lessen. We get up from the floor, put on tefillin, and can sit on chairs. Strangely, according to the Gemara Tan in Tanis, Mincha is the exact time when the Beis HaMikdash began to burn. Shouldn't we be mourning more rather than less? Our parak contains the answer. The burning of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, as described in our parak, is actually a sign of Hashem's love. There was a concern that Hashem would destroy the nation, as described in Parak Tes, chapter 9. When the Beis HaMikdash was burnt, it meant that the Jewish people would survive. The punishment came from love, and so there is hope for the future, and we begin to be consoled and rise up from our mourning. Let's look at the Psukim and see how we see these two themes. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Ve'er'eh v'hine el harakia asher al rosh ha'kruvim ke'evan sapir. Then I looked, and behold, upon the rakia that was over the heads of the kruvim, there appeared like a sapphire stone. Yechezkel first sees the Kisei HaKavod, the heavenly throne, the closest approximation of the glory of Hashem that was Al Rosh HaKruvim, on the heads of the Kruvim, which according to Malbim was above the world of spiritual consequences and was in the world of Rachamim, compassion. Pasuk Vez, verse 2. Hashem says to Levush Badin, Bo el Benos lagelgal el tachas lakruv, go to the axle that turns the wheels that is under the Kruv, which is how the Kruv moves. And take and fill your hands with coals from between the kruvim, meaning from the area that is above the ofanim, above the world of judgment, where there can be rachmim, uzrok al ha'ir, and throw it on the city. This throwing, according to Rashi, does not take place for another 6 years. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, the kruvim stand to the right in the Beis HaMikdash, which is the south, a distance from where the idolatry was in Perek Ches, so there can be mercy. The Shechina of Hashem is still in the Ezra's Kohanim, the courtyard. But then, Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Vayirem Kvod Hashem me'al ha'kruv al miftan ha'bayis, and the glory of Hashem went up from the kruv to the threshold of the house. Hashem leaves the Kodesh HaKadashim and moves outward. The whole Beis HaMikdash is filled with Hashem's glory and brightness. The kruvim are there as well. Pasuk Vav, verse 6, the command to the Levush Badim is given again. Kach Esh, take a fire. The Levush HaBadim stands awaiting the next step. Vayavo, and he came. Vayamod, and he stood. Itzal Ha'ofan, opposite the wheel. The Malbim explains that Gavriel, as an agent of Chesed, didn't want to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, so he stands next to the Ofan, which represents strict consequences, because the Beis HaMikdash should technically not be destroyed. At the same time, Gavriel is still relying on the chesed of Hashem, which is above the kruvim, not to destroy Bnei Yisrael. Pasuk Zion, verse 7. Vayishlach ha-kruv es yado mibenos la-kruvim. And the kruv takes his hand from in the middle of the kruvim, el ha-esh asher benos ha-kruvim, to the fire which is in the midst of the kruvim, vayisa vayitain, and he lifts it up and he gives, el chafnei levush ha-badim, to the hands of the levush badim, Vaikach vayetze, and Gavriel takes and he goes. There is now a change in the plan. Rather than the Levush HaBadim taking the coals, the Kruv sends his hand, lifts the coal, and puts it in the palm of the man, who then leaves. Rashi, quoting the Midrash, says that Gavriel asked the Kruv to hold the coal, vayisa, and to take away some of the coal's heat to spare Bnei Yisrael pain. Then, upon receiving the coal, Gavriel takes the coal and leaves, not burning down the city at all. Pasuk Ches, verse 8, adds a strange element to Yechezkel's vision that seems out of place. Vayera lakruvim tavnis, yad adam tachas kanfehim, and there appeared in the kruvim the form of a man's hand under their wings. We know from Perek Aleph that all the kruvim had hands. These hands were generally hidden. Why did a hand appear here, and what does it have to do with the lessening of the punishment for Bnei Israel? In Avos to Rabbi Nassan, it tells us about how once Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Yoshua were walking outside of Yerushalayim, and they saw the Beis HaMikdash in its destruction. Rabbi Yoshua started lamenting that Bnei Yisrael had lost the ability to get kapara, atonement, for its sins through its sacrifices. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai replied, "My son, do not fear. We have another form of atonement that is just as effective. What is this atonement? Acts of kindness. Gemilus chasadim. This is what the verse from Hosea means when it says, for I desire chesed and not sacrifices. How did the Jews merit to go from being killed to having Hashem's chesed? The Medrash tells us, Gavriel was holding the coals and waiting for 6 years to see if Bnei Israel would do tshuva. After 6 years, Gavriel asked for permission to throw these coals. Hashem replied, Gavriel, Gavriel, wait. These people have been doing stucco one with the other, as the Pasuk says, that the Kruvim saw the form of a hand, as was mentioned in our Pasuk. What was that hand that Yechezkel saw that changed everything? It was the hand of tzedakah that was being done, even in the most dire circumstances during the famine. Following on the description of the Kruvim in Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Pasuk Tes, 3 Yadalid, 9-14, continue to describe the Merkava that Yechezkel sees. There is one significant change in the Merkava from Parak Aleph. In Parak Aleph, Yechezkel saw four faces, an ox, a man, a lion, and an eagle. Here, in Pasuk Yadalid, verse 14, he sees a kruv, a man, a lion, and an eagle. What caused this change? The Malbim explains that the faces of the Merkava are influenced directly from the Kisei HaKavod. The ox was a symbol of judgment. Chazal say that Yechezkel requested that since the ox was a reminder of the Egel HaZahav, the golden calf, which would lead to judgment, it should be replaced with a kruv, the face of a young child, to express more compassion from Hashem. In Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15, we are assured that is, this Kruvim moves, and though it has been described differently, it is the same as the vision in the first parak. Yechezkel is merely describing the important perceptions relevant to this parak. At this point, the psukim turn to the sad end of the parak. Starting with Pasuk Tezvav, verse 16, and continuing through Yud Zayin, verse 17, we read how the Kruvim and the Ofanim are now leaving the Beis HaMikdash. While we had the Beis HaMikdash, Hashem's influence in the world through the Merkava was more direct. Now, as Hashem leaves his home, his Hashkacha Pratis, the divine providence and supervision, is leaving as well. The Merkava, the Kruvim, the Ofanim are only leaving because Hashem is leaving. Pasuk Yud Ches, Vayetzei Kvod Hashem Me'al Miftan Abayis, Vayamod Ala Kruvim. And the glory of Hashem went forth from the threshold of the house and stood over the Kruvim. Vayesu HaKruvim Etz Kanfehem Vayaromu Min Ha'aretz La'inai, Vitseisam, Vofanim, Lumasam. And the Kruvim lifted up their wings and mounted up from the earth in my sight when they went forth and the wheels beside them. Vayamod Pesach Shar Beis Hashem HaKadmoni, and they stood at the door of the east gate of the Lord's house. Uchvod Elokei Yisrael Alehem Milmala, and the glory of the God of Israel was over them above. These two psukim hold within them a poignancy. It does not need to say so many words. It could have just said, Hashem came to the eastern gate. Why does it say that Hashem's glory went out and stood? If you've ever sold a home where you had children, raised them, that last time you walked through the home, you look around and remember all the wonderful memories. It is a very bittersweet time. If chas v'shalom, the house is being foreclosed, or the move is because of a loss, that final tour is heartbreaking. This is the emotion that these psukim are seeking to convey. Hashem left the Beis HaMikdash and is lingering over his house. The Medrash tells us, based on these psukim, that as the Shekhinah was leaving the Beis HaMikdash, it came back and kissed the walls of the Beis HaMikdash and the pillars of Beis HaMikdash and was crying and saying, goodbye, my holy home. Goodbye, my royal home. Goodbye, my precious home. Goodbye. The Perek ends with Yechezkel continuing to describe his vision of the Merkava, its similarity to what he has seen before, and the exit of Hashem in the Merkava from the Beis HaMikdash. This Perek was one of transition. We went from the last parak, which was frightening destruction, to here, where there is a loss and a tragedy, but some hope. Hashem himself tells the Levush Badim, the man clothed in linen, the Malach Gavriel, to take coals which will burn the city. We end the parak, feeling the pain of the Shekhinah as it leaves from this earth and its connection to us so that we may be saved. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilei Nishmas Malka Esther Basvi Yosef.